A gorilla was shot to death to save a boy's life, and can you kind of guess what the response might have been from social media? Welcome to the Apologetics Canada podcast. This is Steve Kim, your host, and I'm here with Andy Steiger.
Present.
Are you an animal person?
That's a great question. Am I an animal person? Well, first of all, I'd like to think of myself as a bit of an animal, as I go by the name Steiger the Tiger. But beyond that, you know, when I was growing up, I had fish. I had like an aquarium, 10-gallon. I even graduated to a 20-gallon tank. And I felt pretty good about that. So, but I never, like, my mom never let me have, like, you know, spiders or snakes or or any of those kind of things. Like, only those things that I could catch in the backyard and keep a secret, you know, in my bedroom for a while until it escaped. But I did have a dog. I had a purebred German Shepherd. His name was Bane.
Bane.
Yeah. I didn't, you know, this was before the new Batman movie, you know, was out. You know, I had no idea. I wasn't a comics guy. I didn't know that that was, you know, Batman's, you know, arch nemesis, Bane. But I thought the name sounded cool. I heard it from a friend, and so I figured I'd name my dog that, which I found out later means death and destruction. And my dog lived up to his name, man. He killed everything living that other than me. But I loved that dog. So in that way, I guess I'm an animal guy. And in fact, for my kids, we've gotten them frogs. So they had some frogs for a while and some fish. But currently, and then, as you know, as those things either died or we gave away, but now currently we have a dog, named Wilson.
Wilson. What breed is Wilson again?
Well, I try not to bring it up because it's a bit of a wussy breed, and it's hard to go from a German Shepherd, a purebred German Shepherd that kills things, to a Labradoodle that licks things. I mean, it's, you know, so I like to emphasize the Labradoodle, you know, just, you know, taper off with the doodle.
Awesome.
So what about yourself, man? Are you an animal guy?
Yeah. Well, my family in Korea, when we were growing up, we always had pets. I remember having a cat.
Is that a common thing in Korea?
Yeah, very common. We used to have a cat, a female one, and one night I guess it just kind of got away somewhere, and then we didn't see her for a number of days, for quite a while actually, and then all of a sudden we started hearing these little soft meowings in the back, and so we went there. We used to have these big cylindrical shaped things to, that's how we heated up our homes and things like that. And so we used to always have a stockpile of them. And in between somewhere, there was the cat with this litter of kittens. And so I remember my brother and my sister, we all kind of pulled them all out and we started like feeding the kittens, you know, milk and all that kind of stuff. I have very fond memories of that. Definitely was an animal person. I'm more of a bird person. I love birds. I had all kinds of birds.
Were you one of those people that will walk around with a parrot on their shoulder?
I wanted to be. It never happened because parrots were too expensive. My dream was to have a macaw. You know, those like big red parrots that pirates have on their shoulders?
Right.
I wanted to have one of those. But
so
there were thousands of dollars.
So if I understand you correctly, you would have liked to have been like a ninja pirate. With a parrot on your shoulder
and train it to kill or something. I don't know, right?
Yeah, it doesn't really strike fear into the heart of people.
Not quite. Yeah.
What about now? Do you have any pets currently?
No, not currently. We live in an apartment and with little kids, you know, especially with my girl running around.
The day will
chances
come.
Chances are, yeah, the day will probably come. My wife's sister-in-law, though, she keeps all these spiders, like very rare spiders, like some tarantulas and things like that. And
hold on, let's just back up for a second. Your sister likes keeping rare and exotic spiders.
My wife's sister-in-law. Yeah,
oh, she your does. Wife's sister-in-law.
Yeah, we actually got to see them. Yeah, and it was pretty interesting. I'm like, I don't know, like I'm an
is that part
person,
of her like career or is that
no,
just a
hobby?
No, that's interesting.
Yeah, but I never could
can't say I've ever heard that before.
Yeah, apparently these are pretty rare and they breed pretty quickly too, so you can sell them for cash and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not a bug person. I'm an animal person, but
I like killing bugs.
Yeah.
Speaking of killing, this is on the news, and it just won't get off the news. In some ways, you know, do you know how some things you're just like, I don't even know that I want to talk about this because it annoys me?
Right.
But yet, here we are when we have to talk about
it. Yeah. I think probably precisely because it's being talked about so much, I thought it would be helpful for us to, we thought it'd be helpful for us to kind of just pitch in.
Well, and I'm actually looking forward to this. I want to talk, we're going to talk about what's happened with this gorilla. How do you pronounce his name?
I think it's Harambe. Yeah, because it's a Western Lowlands silverback, I think, like from Africa. So I'm assuming that's how you pronounce.
Well, I'm not going to be able to say it nearly as awesome as that. But so there's this gorilla, and he's in a zoo in
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And somehow, I can't tell, is it a four-year-old or a three-year-old? I've heard both.
A four-year-old, boy.
Four-year-old boy somehow manages to... Now, from what I heard, I was watching this news report of a person that was there, and she said that, you know, like most kids do, and you have young kids. How old's Maya?
2.5
Okay, 2.5 So you're getting to that age where they ask for everything and whatnot. And so apparently this kid's like, I want this gorilla. Like, I want to hang with the gorilla. And mom's like, no, you can't hang with the gorilla, and has a bunch of other kids that she's looking after as well.
Yeah.
And before she knows it, somehow this four-year-old slips into the cage over the moat and is hanging with this 400-pound gorilla.
He fell, actually, into the moat. It was a good, like, 15-foot drop from what I understand. And the thing, too, was that this is a 40-pound kid. And here is a 450-pound gorilla that can lift, like, it's as strong as 10 adult human males, basically. So if you can, like, what's her name? Amy O'Donohue, I think, is a zookeeper. And I saw this post just this morning on Facebook, and she was kind of explaining the process and why the zoo took the action that they did. And one of the things that she mentioned is this, like, this gorilla is really, really stupid strong.
Yeah.
Like 10 times an average adult human male. So if you can, for example, bench press like 130 pounds, for example, like this thing can lift 1,300 pounds. Like this is a really strong kind of a gorilla. And so the zoo finally came around to protect the boy, to save the boy's life. They decided to shoot Harambe.
Yeah, because I noticed in the news reports they've been talking about, you know, they want everyone to understand the thought process that it went through. Like, why didn't you tranquilize this gorilla? Right. And the reason was because it takes a time, you know, it takes time for the gorilla to go down. And in that period of time, he's so stupid strong, as you were saying, he could easily, if he's agitated, kill this child.
And apparently the stress level will also determine how long the tranquilizer will, how long it'll take to take effect. And already, because of all the people screaming and yelling, the gorilla was getting agitated. And so, and another thing, this zookeeper, Amy O'Donohue, mentioned, Amanda O'Donohue, I think. Anyway, what she said was, imagine if the gorilla had been tranquilized and immobilized, his head would have fallen into the water and the gorilla would have drowned to death. So what do you do? Like you,
he's going to die either way.
Yeah, either way, there's a good chance with the tranquilizer too that the gorilla is going
to
die.
Well, and this is where everything comes to a climax, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. You're dealing with two lives here. Mm-hmm. You have a 4-year-old human and a
17-year-old gorilla.
Is it 17-year-old?
Yeah, 17-year-old.
When did I see there's 38? At any rate. Okay, I'm way off on that. I saw something about 38 somewhere. Okay, so he's 17-year-old gorilla. You know, which one, you know,
do you save?
Yeah, which one do you save?
Yeah. And I think
By the way,
yeah,
this is a fantastic question about where our culture's at currently.
Right, because the social media outrage has been almost, I mean, it was really disturbing, you know, right? It would have been funny if it weren't so disturbing, because a lot of people were saying, oh, you know, the kid was being reckless and the kid invaded the habitat of the gorilla. So we should have saved the gorilla instead. Why should the gorilla die because of the stupidity of the child or the mother, right? So a lot of people were calling for having the parents being held accountable. And some were even calling for criminal prosecution of the mother, especially because the mother was the one who was taking care of the boy at the time. And I thought it was really funny because, okay, you're saying we should, this is what people were saying, that we should charge her with criminal negligence. I'm like, okay, negligence of whom? Right? Because the reason you want to have her charged with criminal negligence is not because the boy fell into the moat, but because the gorilla got shot. So you want to charge her for criminal negligence for the gorilla?
I can't wait to start talking about this, because this is good. Yeah. I mean, this is rich, right?
Yeah.
Like, exactly. It becomes... And as we get into this, you'll see how ridiculous this is. Mm-hmm. Now, just before we get into things, though, I mean, the first thing that goes through my mind is, you know, how on earth do you have, you know, an exhibit that a four-year-old can that easily find his way into? I mean, that's the first thing that's going through my mind.
Yeah. Actually, apparently what happened is they have the enclosure so that you have the optimal view, like unobstructed view. But it's not like the zoo was just being careless about it either, because the enclosures have... This is the first accident of its kind at the Cincinnati Zoo since it opened 38 years ago.
I think there's that's the where 38. 38.
There we go. There's the 38. So in its 38-year history, none of that happened, and this was the first time. So it's not like... The Cincinnati Zoo kind of knowingly kind of made this flawed, you know, security system or whatever, safety system. And it is a 4-year-old boy, and anybody who has a 4-year-old boy, I'm sure, can appreciate just what kind of deadly stunts that the little boys can pull off sometimes. And no security measure is safety measure is sometimes enough. Yeah, he kind of slipped through.
So this unfortunate accident happened. I think it's important for people to understand, like, listen, I'm not somebody that wants to see gorillas shot by any means, but I do want to answer this question and deal with the question. We have two lives here. Mm-hmm. You know, which one is more valuable? Do you shoot, you know, the boy, or do you shoot the gorilla? Like, you know, which one do you save? Now, a lot of people that see what's going on in our culture and they see what kind of response is taking place, you know, kind of scratches their head and goes, where on earth is this coming from? And I kind of want to give a little bit of background to that, because I think people need to appreciate where these ideas are coming from. Why is there so much backlash? And for me, I think, you know, one of the you know, quotes that really speaks to this issue is from, I think, actually the founder of PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, Ingrid Newkirk. She said this in a 1986 interview with the Washington Magazine. She said, quote, "A rat is a pig, is a dog, is a boy. They are all mammals." Mm-hmm. And you have this idea that has been perpetuating in our culture that animals are all on an even playing field. They're all equal. And if humans are just another animal, then we are equal with them. And so what you have then is a culture that really has bought into naturalism to such a degree that that there is no special place for Homo sapiens.
Right.
They are just one of the great apes, as it would be.
But here's my bone to pick with that idea. Given naturalism, where are you getting the idea of equality? because equality is not the same thing as sameness, right? And that's what C.S. Lewis wrote, for example, in the Screwtape Letters, where the senior devil is mentoring a junior devil, and he says, basically, hey, junior devil, just get this in the patient's mind. They call him patients. In the patient's mind, equal means same, right? Mm-hmm. And so people talk about how, you know, like a dog is a bear is a boy is a whatever. We're all mammals. We're all equal. Where are you getting that idea of equality? Because that's not the same thing as sameness. And on naturalism, nobody is equal. We're all different. Andy, you're stronger than I am, right? And maybe I'm
better looking. Well, have more hair.
At least I have. Well, I'm slowly catching up to you. So, but you know what I mean, right? Some people are stronger. Some people are faster. Other people are. Nobody is. These all come in degrees, and so these all come in degrees, and so nobody is really truly equal in that sense, or same, I should say. But if you're going to say that everybody's equal, now you're bringing something that naturalism, atheist naturalism, doesn't have the metaphysical resources for.
Well, I think we brought this up before, and I think it just serves mentioning now. This is the subtitle of Darwin's book, Origins of Species. Mm. You know, Origin of Species by Natural Selection for the Preservation of Favored Species, right? And that kind of speaks to that idea, like they're not all equal, you know, and basically nature's going to favor that which is
stronger.
Now, listen to this quote from Jane Goodall. And I think this kind of really speaks to the problem of our culture as we get so confused on this issue. She says, we should respect the individual ape just as we should respect the individual human, that we should recognize the right of each ape to live a life unmolested by humans, if necessary, helped by humans. In the same way, we should recognize these rights for individual human beings, and that the same ethical and moral attitude should apply to ape beings and human beings alike. What do you think about that, Mr. Steve Kim?
Well, I guess what I'm thinking is, okay, this is what I'm thinking. We're humanizing gorillas, probably because they share a lot of the traits that, you know, that we as humans have, right? But I'm thinking, when we humanize animals, and I've mentioned this before, I've always find it interesting that we always view these animals in human-like manner, and anything that is not human-like, we just remove it out of the picture. So when we think of a lion,
like, for example, like we name them,
yeah,
like we've named this gorilla,
right? And another thing too is that when I'm thinking, for example, a lion. Remember Cecil the lion that in Zimbabwe that got killed last year, right around the same time when Center for Medical Progress was releasing all these videos about Planned Parenthood. This thing blows up on social media. This dentist goes to Zimbabwe and hunts and kills Cecil the lion. And everybody, same kind of thing, right? There was this outrage on social media. And they're humanizing Cecil, you know, attributing all kinds of, you know, oh, this is a magnificent creature, in which I agree. But then I'm thinking, okay, but whenever we think about these things, we don't think about what the animal does that's not human-like.
Right.
Well, when it kills and eats, when it hunts down humans and kills them, you know, preys on them. What about pigs that eat their young? I mean, we talk about pigs being smart and things like that, but we forget to think about these other side of.
Well, I got a better one. Yeah. Here's my personal favorite. If you've ever watched National Geo and anything on killer whales, then you'll know that a killer whale weighs 6 tons, and it enjoys grabbing hold of seal pups and tail kicking them 80 feet into the air and then body slamming them repeatedly before eating them.
Oh, wow.
Have you ever seen that?
No.
It's fantastic. Go YouTube it. But what are we supposed to do about that, right? Because there's not animal for the ethical treatment of animals. Mm-hmm. Notice that this is key. There is P, people for the ethical mm-hmm. treatment of animals. And I think this is where that Jane Goodall quote totally goes astray. I mean, what on earth do you mean by ethics? Mm-hmm. You know, what on earth do you mean that humans should recognize the right of each ape? So what exactly is that right? You see, because I think you're right. In many ways, what we're doing is we're anthropomorphizing apes or whatever it is. We're making them or giving them human characteristics. But here's the reality that PETA's doing and that our culture is doing in large that they don't realize. They're not actually lifting animals up to the level of humans. They're actually exactly. taking humans and bringing them down to the level of animals. Yeah. And when you do that, here's my question then. Well, why shouldn't you just shoot an ape? Mm-hmm. Because you're stronger than it. Why don't I just tail kick a sealed pup 80 feet in the air and body slam it? That's what an animal do. That's the ethics of animals. They don't have any ethics, mm-hmm. right? But yet I do have an ethic. I understand that I am held to a kingdom that is beyond the animal kingdom.
Right.
Right? And this is the thing that you don't see with our culture, this total logical yeah. inconsistency where I am being held to account. The gorilla, the animals, they are not being held to account because we understand yeah. they don't know. They, morality is not something that they can grasp or understand.
Right. And I've spoken on this before, right? What does it take to have a meaningful, like objective morality? Well, you need value, duty, and accountability. Moral value, moral duty, and moral accountability, which we call justice. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, how do these apply to animals? Like, do animals have duties to each other? You know, I mean, you may see some even seemingly altruistic behavior, you know, like a troop of baboon or something like that. But I mean, where are we getting even the idea of ethics from animals? Well, somebody might say, well, it's a sociobiological evolution. Right. And I've again spoken on this before, but if that's true, if that's all that morality is, then there's nothing stopping us from just starting a new evolutionary track, so to speak, and just start killing because there is no ought.
That's right.
If sociobiological evolution is all that our morality is, or all that morality is full stop, then sociobiological evolution just tells us what is the case, but it doesn't really tell us what ought to be the case. And so all of a sudden you're making that is-ought jump, right, which David Hume pointed out, you can't do that. It's naturalistic fallacy.
And so what you're seeing then is there is this distinction between animals and humans. We understand that distinction. We see it, that we are held to account because we actually understand morality. We can grasp it. The problem is you've got people in our culture like Peter Singer, mm-hmm. who an ethicist, by the way, that was named one of the 100 most influential people. Yeah.
Very, very prominent ethicist out there right now.
And he wrote this in his book, Rethinking Life and Death. He says, quote, "With the disproof of the Hebrew myth of creation, the belief that human beings were specially created by God in his image was also undermined." And really what we're seeing is that's what happens in a culture that has divorced itself of God, mm-hmm. that has removed the sanctity of life, and that people have been that people were created and endowed with an ability to know and to love and to understand this, you know, fact value split, mm-hmm. that there is truly something unique about human life and valuable about human life. And so again, what you have is you don't have animals being lifted to the status of people. You have people being lowered to the status of an animal. And when you do that, think about this for a moment, because this is where the real inconsistencies of our culture comes into play. PETA, for example, would argue that no one should own a pet. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you had a cat in the past and I had a dog and currently do, mm-hmm. think about it. I mean, if we're all just animals and we're all on equal playing field.
Why not?
Why I am enslaving my dog to my wills to entertain me. Mm-hmm. And so they would say that you shouldn't have pets at all. Mm-hmm. That this is immoral.
Right.
It's wrong. I mean, you shouldn't even have the zoo. You shouldn't even have gorillas in captivity.
Yeah, in the first place, right?
That's right. In the first place, because, you know, we're all just equal.
Yeah, but I'm thinking again, like I said just now, like, why not? If naturalism is true, why shouldn't I enslave other things for pure? Because, I mean, it's all just particles in motion, so.
Right, now this gets back to the inconsistency. If might mm-hmm. makes right, mm-hmm. then why can't I enslave a gorilla?
And if we can't, which a lot of these people are saying, right, like PETA and other animal rights activists are saying, then we're importing some standard of good and wrong, good and evil, right and wrong, to this discussion. So then we would have to ask, well, where is this coming from? Where are you getting this good and evil, right and wrong from?
Mm-hmm. 'Cause clearly it doesn't exist in the animal kingdom. Mm-hmm. Which is something that I find fascinating. Nobody's holding gorillas account for killing other gorillas. Mm-hmm. By the way, this is one of the things that Jane Goodall was very disturbed by, and that's that's what chimpanzees do, and mm-hmm. that is they eat other chimpanzees.
Right. And again, this is
brutally.
This is the kind of thing that we don't talk about when we're humanizing other animals, right?
That's
we
right.
only pick the traits that resemble us. And we go, they deserve rights and they deserve, you know, they have their morality and that sort of a thing. But yeah, chimpanzees eating each other, cannibalism. What about
so hamsters? we're not taking them to court, you know? No chimpanzees are holding each other accountable. There is no, you know, ethic that they're operating under besides this idea that Mike Meek's right. Mm-hmm. So if we're all animals, well, then wouldn't that same ethic apply? And they would say, well, no, it wouldn't, because we seem to be operating from a higher ethic. And, mm-hmm. and again, it gets back to this question. Well, where is that coming from?
Yeah, I guess it just really disturbs me. If you watch any sort of a typical sort of environmentalist documentary or things like that, if you watch it, it's incredible how humanity is downplayed and devalued, right? Humanity is this parasite on this planet. And yes, we do destroy the environment. But then it insinuates a lot of things. Like, what would happen to the planet if gorillas were all gone, as opposed to if all humans were gone, right? People make that sort of comparison. And they would talk about how, if all humans were eradicated, you know, within like a century or two, like this planet would be like this really lush green environment, you know, basically, you know, animal paradise kind of a thing. And I guess just what's implied in all of that, just devaluing of humanity, is quite disturbing to me. And you can.
I think this is really the crux of the issue, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Is the devaluing of humans.
Dehumanization.
Yeah.
Right. And it's incredible the kinds of responses that you see in social media. Now, many of our listeners, you might know this name, Matt Walsh. He's a conservative writer. And he's, you know, I was born and raised in Korea, and I consider myself Canadian as well. And so I'm like, I try to be polite as much as I can. It's just my upbringing, right? So I don't often appreciate the tone of his writing, because he doesn't mince words, but I do appreciate the insights that he has. But anyway, he talked about the hypocrisy of, you know, holding candlelight vigils for Harambe, for you know, a dead gorilla, when 125,000 babies are aborted every year. Now, this is the crazy thought. Roe v. Wade, passed in 1973, legalized abortion in the United States. And since then, in 43 years, the U.S. has killed 55 million and counting, right? Mm-hmm. 55 million babies. Now, that's over 43 years. Around the world, 125,000 per day. If you do the math, in a year, that translates to something like 45 million per year. That's like the South Korean population, I think, 45 million, 55 million, or something like that. But it's certainly more than Canada. We're wiping out entire nations, like countries' worth of population out of existence every year. But you know, so he's talking about this. And now here's the funny thing. One feminist apparently read this article, and she tweeted this message saying, you know, people like this make me want to.
People like who?
Matt Walsh.
Okay.
People like this make me want to put 400 aborted fetuses in a blender and make a smoothie and drink it.
Unbelievable.
I was absolutely flabbergasted. I'm like, don't you see that this is just pure evil, what you're saying? Mm-hmm. And just that's what it leads to.
The complete devaluing of human life.
Exactly.
Below an animal, in fact.
Right. I think there is, if you see some of these comments, you know, it's obvious. I mean, they'll say stuff like, well, they just should have let the gorilla live and let the boy die, because we have, you know, billions of kids running around, but this is an endangered species or whatever. And they're valuing an animal over a human being. But I have to wonder, and this is one of the things that Matt Walsh pointed out too, is that I wonder how many people would actually live that out and not just give lip service to it. Because if you were to see, say...
You can't actually live that out.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
If you were to actually see a boy chained and hanging and dying, and a gorilla chained and hanging and dying, which one would you save, right? If you walk into the woods, and let's say, you know, like this is like the antebellum South or whatever, and black people are getting lynched and things like that, and you see a four-year-old black boy hanging from the tree and about to die, and you see a silverback gorilla, you know, hanging from the tree about to die, which one would you go for, right? And this is something that J.P. Moreland actually said in one of his lectures, I think from a while ago, I think from early 2000s or something like that. He apparently went to this meeting in Hollywood somewhere where he was speaking to a group of, you know, filmmakers, and they got to speaking about, you know, human value and things like that. And this one guy was saying, you know, how dolphins are really smart and we should, you know, like, and he was basically saying something like he was valuing dolphins over people, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And what J.P. Moreland said was, sir, if I weren't a Christian gentleman, I would knock your teeth out. Because seriously, are you suggesting that if a dolphin were dying and if my daughter were dying and they both need kidney transplant, and we only have one kidney, you would seriously consider giving that kidney to the dolphin instead of my daughter? If I weren't a Christian gentleman, I would knock your teeth out, and you know better. And apparently that really stopped him in his track and got him thinking. I'm like, oh, I never really thought about that kind of implication of my view. So
don't you think that's true as well? You know better? I mean, to me, this just speaks again to the brokenness of humanity, that in our brokenness, it's part of this marring of the image of God, if you will, where we know that we were created and that we were made unique in a way that we understand this fact value split, that we have this understanding of morality and that we operate according to it, but in our brokenness, we rebel against this created order. And we do the complete opposite. And so instead of lifting up human life and valuing human life, we degrade human life even below an animal.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully that'll get you thinking and keep you thinking. And I hope this was helpful to you, listeners. Feel free to write in, steve@apologeticscanada.com or info@apologeticscanada.com. And we'll do our best to interact with your messages and comments. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more.